You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. It's Tuesday. Feels like Friday. It's 2025. Might feel like 2027, but I'm here with each and every one of you. My name's Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, Donald Trump will be addressing a joint session of Congress this evening for the first time since retaking the Oval Office in January. Some are calling it a State of the Union address, but it's not technically, since he hasn't been in office for yet a year. Well, not to worry, folks, we've got you covered here at Civic Media starting just before 8 p.m. Our special coverage will kick off. You're not going to want to miss that. We're also going to cover the Democratic response given this year by the newly elected Senator Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan. So don't forget to tune in this evening. We'll have lots of special coverage for you. You're not going to want to miss that, because just a few things have happened. Apparently, we're now in a trade war and have abandoned Ukraine, We'll see what else happens. You know, a little dismantling of the federal government, slashing of Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. Just a couple of things for the new president to discuss these mere, five and a half weeks in. But before all that happens tonight, we've got to check in locally, and I'm so glad to have Dan Schaefer, our political editor here, creator of the Recombobulation Area, with me this afternoon at a special time. Dan, you usually join us at 2:30, today at 2 p.m. Thanks so much for making time. A couple of things happening here closer to home.
Always a lot going on, Maggie, and it is, of course, discombobulating times, but that's why I'm here, to recombobulate with you on a Tuesday as we do every week.
Well, what has been going on just this day? There are a number of events just today. Dan, tell us about a few of them.
Yeah, so I was just before joining you here was at the War Memorial Center in downtown Milwaukee, where Susan Crawford was meeting with the Rotary Club of Milwaukee and the Milwaukee Press Club for a luncheon panel interview discussion. Some interesting stuff there, absolutely. But I thought, you know, just from a big picture standpoint, you know, you've had Susan Crawford on your airwaves a number of times. You know, we've watched, I was at an event at Marquette University last week where she was speaking with Judge Derek Mosley. And then again today, meeting with, you know, a couple of reporters from the Milwaukee area and speaking to the Rotary at lunch. And I must say, I think this was maybe the best public event that I've seen her speak at. And you know, it was the questions were substantive. She had a good command of the room. She was nimble with some of the questions that both reporters and audience members were sending her way. And I thought just overall, you know, it just seemed like a really good sign for her campaign that, you know, she's, you know, performing really well in events like this. Now that we're getting into crunch time for the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So, you know, we can talk about a couple of the issues that were raised during that. But I think, you know, just from the big picture standpoint, just from, you know, just kind of zooming out, I thought Crawford did really well in this event and is certainly showing some improvement after being on the campaign trail for a while. And, you know, I just thought in general, you know, was a really interesting discussion. So the Rotary Club of Milwaukee has that one on their YouTube page. Go check that one out after you listen to all the Maggie Dawn Show and all the other programming across the Civic Media Network, of course.
There's always a phenomenon, Dan, when specifically in these technical positions, we have two technical positions on the April 1st ballot, less than a month away. Folks, please, please, please make sure you have a plan to early vote. Get it done so you don't have to worry about it. Make sure you know that you're registered. You know where your polling place is. You can always check that out at myvote.wi.gov. 1 month away, we have two what I call technical positions on the ballot. These are not elected official talking heads. These are actual jobs where you have to know stuff and do things. And we've got both of them. Again, the superintendent of public instruction and a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice. And of course, the challenge is that in a lot of these technical elected jobs, you often have people who frankly aren't the suavest or most captivating public speakers or most studied and experienced politicians. And, you know, Brad Schimmel's been through two statewide elections. He's won an election in Waukesha County to become circuit court judge, if I'm not mistaken. So he's got some runway under his belt, if I can mix a couple metaphors there, Dan. Whereas Susan Crawford, fairly new to the politics game. It's interesting to me. I'm now seeing from her in other interviews, other opportunities, making the attack lines, saying the things that need to be said about her opponent. You and I have discussed the Washington Post article just yesterday from former Journal Sentinel reporter Patrick Marley, wherein he discusses the fact that Brad Schimmel was asked a very direct question about whether or not he believes the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision coming out of the 2020 election was correct. And Schimmel basically said, "I have a day job. I haven't read it. I don't know anything about it." And when Susan Crawford was asked to respond to that comment by Schimmel, she said, "What should be every Wisconsinite's question, whether or not you agree with the Supreme Court's decision, which is, are you effing kidding me if you haven't read the decision and garnered some viewpoint or opinion about this?" Dan, I'm expecting that you saw her do more of the same today. Can you give us a couple examples?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought that was a really important comment that she made in the Washington Post. The direct quote, "I think it's astonishing that Brad Schimmel would not be familiar with probably the most consequential decision the Wisconsin Supreme Court has made in decades." And there were questions about those particular comments that came up during the discussion today, and she really went in on Schimmel in a couple different instances, calling his campaign as nakedly partisan as you can get. And then, talking about that, that question in particular, it's just clearly very problematic, the route that Schimmel is taking on this. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to pull up the exact quote from what she said. That's all right, though. But she did talk about, just in general, how problematic it is that Schimmel has kind of talked out of both sides of his mouth on this issue. She talked about, Trump in particular. And then, Maggie, from your perspective, from like a lawyer's perspective, are there lawyers who might be running for Wisconsin Supreme Court who are unfamiliar with maybe the highest profile decision that the Wisconsin Supreme Court has made? How buried in the sand does your head have to be to not have an opinion on this?
It's an astoundingly tone deaf, facially unreasonable statement for Brad Schimmel to make. This is the kind of thing that I would run in an ad on repeat, because it shows you that Brad Schimmel is willing to lie even about the most basic things. "I've read it. I think I would have made distinctions in the decision. I wasn't in the seat." Like, there's a million different things that Brad Schimmel could have and likely should have said in response to what is a critical question. Instead, saying, "I have a day job and I haven't paid any attention to it," is so, again, foolish sounding, as well as sounding condescending and out of touch. It's like you checked, Brad Schimmel checked all of the don't do boxes for a candidate in that response. And again, I think Susan Crawford zeroing in on that, being very plain and saying that is absolutely ludicrous. Of course he has an opinion about it. But what he's afraid to do is tell Wisconsin voters what his opinion is. And that is a very scary prospect when it is coupled with the amazing spending that you see pouring in from Elon Musk, who will have a case pending before the Wisconsin Supreme Court related to how these technical rules in the state of Wisconsin about whether or not Tesla can have its own car dealerships here in the state. Did those questions come up at Rotary today, Dan?
Yeah, Elon Musk did of course come up a little bit, and she talked about Musk called him the quote unelected right-hand man to President Trump right now, who is involved in quote apparently dismantling parts of our federal government. She also talked about how he doesn't know anything. She said he doesn't know anything about me, and alluded to the story from a couple weeks ago where he used a photo of a different Susan Crawford in some of his campaign. So, you know, and so he certainly talked a lot about that. And I think these judicial races, like you said, these are technical positions, right? And she didn't want to really weigh in. She's like, you know, she's not going to weigh in on a case that's not, you know, in front of her when she's seated on the bench. And she was very careful in many instances throughout the panel discussion to say that. But, you know, she is clearly taken. She clearly sees what's happening with Musk at the federal government. And I think it's just in general for voters, I think it's really important to see some level of checks and balances. And I think that's what, you know, everything is being viewed in the political arena right now through the prism of Trump's scorched earth return to office, of what Elon Musk is doing, bringing a wrecking ball to all different sectors of the federal government, and recognizing that a state court can be an important check and balance, I think is an incredibly important piece of this election.
We're going to talk about what I'm going to call the Musk of it all, the Musk effect on this election, not just in the direct spend, effectively filling Brad Schimmel's coffers with all kinds of Musk money, but we're going to talk about abortion and a couple of other issues that came up today at Rotary. We've got a special guest at a special time today, Dan Schaefer, recombobulating with all of you for the State Slate with Dan Schaefer. You can find that here every Tuesday right here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're going to be back with more Dan, which you're not going to want to miss. What did Susan Crawford have to say about a woman's right to choose in Wisconsin? We discuss further when we come back after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. If you're just joining us, welcome. It's Tuesday, so we're joined by Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's very own political editor and creator of the Recombobulation Area, which you can find on Substack and get signed up for through Civic Media's website at civicmedia.us. We're talking today about Susan Crawford's appearance at the Milwaukee Rotary Club, also hosted by the Milwaukee Press Club this afternoon, where she was, in Dan's estimation, more nimble, more adept, more ready to fight than she's ever been in a Q&A session. Dan, let's get to the big issue that seems to be looming on the April 1st ballot. It might as well read, do you think women in the state of Wisconsin should have the right to choose when it comes to abortion? A lot of prognostication going on about that. We do think the court is likely to bring down a decision about abortion rights before the next justice is sworn in August. But depending on the outcome of the election, there is certain to be additional lawsuits if Mr. Schimmel were to win. How did Judge Crawford handle the abortion questions today?
Yeah, it is kind of like this situation where a judge doesn't want to talk about, judicial candidate doesn't want to talk about a case that might be before the court. So she was very careful about opining on that. But when it came to, you know, just kind of the bigger picture question surrounding it, she was very clear in saying that she believes the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided. She called it the first time in the history of the Supreme Court of the United States that overturned rights that were recognized under the Constitution. So she's not going to opine on what's happening before the court. She's not going to, the certain case that's making its way through to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. She's, again, very careful about not saying anything specific about this type of race. But I think, you know, just talking about it in the context of what happened at the national level, she also had some other pretty interesting comments about the U.S. Supreme Court later in the discussion as well. But just it was very clear in saying that she believes the Dobbs decision was wrongly decided.
And I want to make clear for folks that are listening, as your lady lawyer here on the air, the reason that Judge Crawford can say without an ethical problem, without violating any rules, that the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision was wrongly decided, while refraining from further comment about the Wisconsin specific case, is that the Dobbs decision was characterizing and quantifying in a new way what privacy rights exist under the federal Constitution. The questions that will be before the Wisconsin Supreme Court do not ask the Wisconsin Supreme Court to understand or interpret federal law. The court will be confronted by different questions. That is why Judge Crawford can say, I disagree and believe the Supreme Court of the United States wrongly decided the Dobbs decision, and yet be completely within the rules, coloring within the lines, if you will, when it comes to not providing an opinion or analysis of a case that is certain to potentially either be heard by Judge Crawford, but is being heard by the current Wisconsin Supreme Court and may come up again in some other question or form, including whether or not the 1849 law actually bans abortion. It does not, in this lady lawyer's opinion. And secondarily, whether or not the Wisconsin Constitution, as distinct, separate and apart from the federal Constitution, grants greater privacy rights that extend and cover the right to access abortion care for women here in the state of Wisconsin. Those are two entirely separate questions that Dobbs says nothing about. That's why she can discuss that. Tell me, Dan, what else did she have to say about the Supreme Court of the United States?
Yeah, so there was an audience question about whether she thinks justices on courts like the U.S. Supreme Court or state courts like the Wisconsin Supreme Court should be appointed versus elected, which I think is an interesting, you know, kind of bigger picture question. But her response, you know, and this was her response with it was kind of revealing. And she talked about how she said in the public confidence for U.S. Supreme Court is at an all-time low. She mentioned the lack of a judicial code of ethics, mentions the justices taking trips and receiving gifts and having all sorts of communication with those who might have litigation before the court. And then she talked about Wisconsin. So I'll quote directly from Judge Crawford here. She said, I think for Wisconsin, giving the voters a choice is a better way to go about it. Even in the situation we're in right now with the obscene amount of spending on these races and all the false attack ads run against me in this race. So I think that is an interesting point that she is making, even though she is enduring quite a lot as a candidate right now, you know, running false ads that are literally distorting how she looks.
Right.
Putting other people's faces next to her name on the screen. Yeah,
that
oops.
One's not me.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating question. And I think as discussions about this happen more broadly, you know, given the lack of trust, the lack of confidence that Americans have in the judicial system, both from the right and the left, it's kind of like no matter who you ask, they're like, yeah, those damn judges. What we're getting closer to, I think, Dan, is a critical mass of people saying this isn't the way we expect our judiciary to work. And I expect that within the rest of our lifespans, you and I, we are very likely to see substantive discussions about binding judicial codes of ethics and term limits. And to me, getting a binding code of ethics, establishing term limits, having potentially other system reforms for the selection of judges, like nonpartisan expert committees that recommend slates for either appointment or actually approve candidates, those kinds of things, we're going to see some more discussion of, as well as some baseline campaign finance reform that would likely apply and especially needs to apply in the case of elected judicial officers. Just this lady lawyer's two cents on that question. Briefly, in the time we've got left, about a minute left, we also had the State of the City address by Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. How did that go for the mayor this morning, Dan?
Yesterday morning, Cavalier Johnson at the Baird Center. Always, you know, lots of, you know, the big names in Milwaukee will come down and put their suit coats on and get there for that one. But, you know, I was hoping for a little bit more of a bold vision for Mr. Cavalier Johnson. He's, you know, just in a year ago, he was elected with huge, huge margins. I would like to see a little bit more. Maybe there's still more to come. An actual mandate, yes.
An actual mandate that might give room for an actual broad sweeping vision for the city. Maybe we need to hear a little bit more from our mayor. Dan, I wish we had more time to hear from you. My thanks, my friend. That is Dan Schaefer, political editor, creator of the Recombobulation Area. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to be very excited to be joined by Megan Rowe of Opportunity Wisconsin, talking about Trump's attacks on your Social Security and other benefits. Keep it locked right here. More coming up on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something wrong here, there can be no denying. One of us is.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a packed afternoon for you. Before I introduce my next guest, let me just let you know what is coming down the pike. At 3 p.m., I'm going to be joined by Jeff Mandel of Law Forward to discuss an op-ed he just authored for the Cap Times, in which he discusses Brad Schimmel's attempts to keep Wisconsin voters from holding government accountable. How do we do that? Well, step one is usually through our sunshine laws and our open records requests. Well, Supreme Court candidate Brad Schimmel's been actively working to undermine the potency of Wisconsin's open records law. We're going to discuss that with Jeff at 3 o'clock. And at 3:30, I'm going to be joined by Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. We're going to touch upon the House budget proposal, as well as David's thought about what we might hear this evening from Donald Trump in his first quasi-State of the Union address, not technically one because he hasn't been in office for a year. And of course, Civic Media's got that special coverage starting for you this evening, just before 8 p.m., including the Democratic response from newly elected U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan. Again, check that out and mark your calendars. But in this half hour, I'm very excited to be joined by Megan Rowe of Opportunity Wisconsin to talk about the cuts that you and your family may be facing, especially if you're on Medicaid, especially if you receive SNAP benefits. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Megan, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I just wanted to start out with a bit of a level setter. Calvin, help me make sure I've got this sound nice and clear for everyone to listen to. When we talk about entitlement programs or non-discretionary mandatory spending in the federal budget, those are the techno-speak terms for things like Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and SNAP. So again, if you're out there and you're listening to Republicans and Democrats talk about this stuff and you hear words like, again, discretionary spending versus non-discretionary spending and or entitlements, just remember Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and SNAP benefits, that's mandatory spending. It's baked into the budget cake. It typically is not on the cutting block. And again, these are also referred to as entitlements. Cal, let's take a listen to what now President Trump said about these very benefits on CNBC just last year.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting, and in terms of also the theft and the bad management of entitlements.
So everyone here, and you included, Megan, we all stand for cutting down on people and cutting off people who abuse these benefits. But saying the words, I'm open to cutting entitlements, that is what Donald Trump has said on the record. And then out of the other side of his mouth, he says things like, I'll never cut Social Security and Medicaid. What's actually going on here, Megan?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say I was surprised that we have found ourselves where we are today. But to catch folks up a little bit, last week, President Trump and Republicans in Congress gave the green light to make massive cuts to programs like Medicaid, food assistance, and other programs, just so they could pay for even more tax cuts for the wealthy and big corporations. And so it is, like I said, I wish I could say we were surprised, but I think we've known all along that they're trying to make significant cuts in order to give more money to those wealthy and well-connected.
To put this in very specific numbers for folks, and I did this math on the radio yesterday, we're going to do it again because it is so compelling. What the House budget proposal that they have adopted, which is now going to be before the Senate, which is what Donald Trump wants, this is the big, beautiful bill that he keeps talking about. What that proposal did, it did not specify and direct cuts to Medicaid or SNAP food assistance benefits. What it did was mandate bottom or floor levels of cuts and delegate the responsibility to find those cuts to specific House congressional committees. So the analysis has to be not did the bill say cut Social Security or cut Medicaid or cut food assistance, because it doesn't say that. The analysis has to be when it mandates $880 billion at least in cuts that the House Energy and Commerce Committee must make, you have to then look at what spending does the House Commerce and Energy Committee actually oversee. And as soon as you go that extra step, Megan, you quickly find out that only $200 million in federal spending overseen by that specific House committee is non-Medicaid spending. So even if, this is an impossibility, the House Energy and Commerce Committee eliminated all $200 billion of all other non-Medicaid spending, which is an impossibility, they would still, to meet the House mandated minimum amount of cuts, they would still have to find $680 billion in cuts from Medicaid. That is basic math. Why are Republicans lying about this to their constituents?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And same goes for the House Agriculture Committee, where Derek Van Orden, yes, our congressman from the third, sits. You know, they were mandated to cut $230 billion. And I think similarly, the math isn't mathing. You know, you are going to have to make significant cuts to the SNAP program in order to meet that mandate. And so, yeah, Congressman Van Orden, Congressman Stile, are frankly lying to their constituents. And not only are they lying about these potential cuts, they are refusing to answer to their constituents who are very concerned about what these could mean.
It's no surprise to me that Derek Van Orden, coward that he is as an elected official, I can say that while I deeply respect his service in the military to our country, coward as an elected official, did a little whoops-a-daisy swap out bait and switch with his town hall and moved it without announcing the move to his constituents. A lot of people didn't know where to find him. He didn't want to face the music. That is a cowardly thing to do. We also know that just today, the House GOP's campaign arm, the chair of that organization, told Republican lawmakers today, this morning, to stop holding in-person town halls amid the wave of angry backlash over these cuts. Megan, what do people in the first and third congressional districts need to understand, despite Congressman Van Orton's pledges to never cut SNAP benefits, which he received as a young person, to never cut Medicaid? And it goes beyond the first and third. I'm going to throw in Tom Tiffany. I'm going to throw in Scott Fitzgerald. I'm going to throw in Tony Weed's district, all of them. What do these folks need to understand is going on here?
Well, first, I have to give credit where credit is due to both Scott Fitzgerald and Glenn Grothman, who at least have the backbone to hold town halls and hear from their constituents, something, to my understanding, Derek Van Orden has yet to do in his time serving as a member of Congress. So certainly, I think his constituents need to know that they need to keep up the pressure on him to hold those town halls. And I believe just a few minutes ago before I got on, Congressman Van Orden responded to this news story about people telling them not to hold town halls, saying that pressure to hold town halls is something akin to the playbook from Nazis and Marxists. So if that's what Congressman Van Orden thinks about his constituents and their desire to get answers from him, I think he has a lot to answer for. But I think what
hang on. I'm sorry. Did a sitting congressman, a Wisconsin congressman, just call his constituents Nazis for wanting to address their concerns face to face in three dimensions in person to the congressman directly? Did he just call his constituents Nazis, Megan? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, he essentially claimed that the tactics of pressuring members of Congress to hold town halls and to show up and demand answers to questions about these devastating cuts comes from the same playbook as Nazis and Marxists. So yeah, it's really quite appalling. And frankly, I think folks in the third see right through it.
Well, folks, if you would like to express your opinion about Derek Van Orden, if you live in Derek Van Orden's congressional district and you would like to express your opinion about being called a Nazi because you think members of Congress, Democrat or Republican, MAGA or not, should actually be required and should be encouraged to hold in-person town halls so that they can hear directly from the people that put them in their office, who pay their salaries and benefits, please give us a call or text 855-752-4842. If you are in Derek Van Orden's congressional district and you object to being called a Nazi for wanting Congressman Van Orden to hold one town hall, give us a call, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I am appalled. Perhaps Mr. Van Orden needs to go back to high school history classes. But I'm sorry, Megan, I had cut you off because I was so shocked to hear that. Thank you for breaking some news for us. But what really is going on here? Why won't, I mean, my question has always been, dear MAGAs, if you are so proud of the cuts, if this is such a good thing for the middle class, if this is going to work so fabulously well, why not just tell people that this is what you're doing?
Yeah, listen, I think the whole point of this, as I'm sure you've discussed previously here, is that this is somewhat of a double whammy. Not only are they cutting these programs or planning to cut these programs that people rely on, but these same people that are going to be impacted are also not going to benefit from the tax breaks that they're using this money to put towards. So these cuts are all being made in the name of extending more tax breaks to the ultra rich and big corporations that are also conveniently donors to these Republicans, and the middle class and workers in Wisconsin are going to be left behind.
Look at how the math checks out to Megan's exact point. The tax cuts for households in the top 1%, the richest of the rich, the top 1%, if the House budget proposal that Donald Trump laid the terms for is formally adopted by the Senate and signed into law by Donald Trump, the cost of that is $1.1 trillion. Oh, guess what the total amount of quote unquote savings will be from the proposed cuts to Medicaid and SNAP? Oh, magically, it also equals $1.1 trillion dollars. I don't think that getting that math correct was an error. We've got some folks that want to weigh in, Megan, if that's okay with you. I'd love to give our listeners a chance to express their opinion. Jean from Eau Claire, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. Do you think constituents that demand town halls from Congress people are Nazis?
Well, I'll tell you something. Maybe that's in response to my call today, because it seems every time I call his office, he takes an action that's really quite negative toward people calling in. And I was very concerned about what the president did, you know, to Zelensky and, you know, how it goes with, you know, the hearings that were on and what they're doing with Social Security and how they're attacking our country from the inside out and hurting people instead of, you know, trying to, you know, make our country a better place. And maybe that was, maybe I'm a Nazi, huh? Thank you. This is so ridiculous. He needs to be voted out fast. Thank you, guys. Hang in.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean from Eau Claire. We've got Tom from Jackson up next. Are constituents that demand Congress people show up for town halls Nazis, Tom?
Hello. Can you hear
Hello,
me?
Hello. Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
I listened to what he had to say, and what your guest is saying is not exactly accurate. What he was saying is that they're Democrats who are pretending to be Republicans that are disrupting these meetings. That's what he's saying.
And Tom, I don't care if Democrats are coming to a Republican's town hall. If they're a constituent, they ain't a Nazi. We're going to come back with our special guest, Megan Rowe of Opportunity Wisconsin. We're going to dig in and share some of the numbers of folks right here in the state that depend on SNAP and Medicaid. You and your family may be part of that number. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My name's Maggie. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everyone. My special guest this half hour is Megan Rowe of Opportunity Wisconsin. We're discussing the MAGA proposal to cut Medicaid and SNAP benefits. And don't worry, they'll be coming for your Social Security and Medicare next, all in the service of tax cuts for billionaires and the world's largest corporations, a good expression of old-fashioned American values. Yes, punish the middle class, punish those working poor folks barely getting by so that the rich can pay less in taxes. Makes perfect sense to me. We were discussing the fact that Derek Van Orten today, when criticized for dodging his constituents, never holding an actual town hall and facing the proverbial music, being a coward as an elected official, also picking on Senate pages in the rotunda and shoving women that he gets behind in line, setting all those things aside. Yes, a coward as an elected official. Let's listen to the actual comments out of Van Orten's mouth himself. Here's Congressman Van Orten today.
Well, it's not just Glenn. They're over disrupting Fitz's meetings, and they did a whole bunch of Republicans around the country. And people have to understand, you know, I'm a little history buff, and how people associated with the communist movement and the national socialism movement used to get their way politically is they would do stuff like this, and they were called agitators. So this is a time-tested, proven method for very far left and very far right groups to get their way. And when I say very far right, I mean actual national socialists. So here's what I told everybody. We've been getting harassing calls. I just got more death threats last week, me personally. If anybody's coming to any of these meetings that we have, and they act in an unlawful manner by harassing people, or if they're being disruptive, refusing to leave a venue, we will have them arrested and charged with a Class B misdemeanor.
Nothing like calling your constituents Nazis because they disagree with you, misrepresenting history so grossly, and then threatening your constituents with criminal prosecution for voicing their pointed disagreement with you. I want to be very clear here. Violence and death threats are completely inappropriate and antithetical to American values and democracy. Full stop, no exceptions. Megan, your response to Van Orden's comments, and just for the record, I want to make clear, liberal advocacy groups have posted on social media and in other places encouraging constituents who are worried about these things, regardless of party, to attend these town halls. There is zero evidence anywhere that non-constituents, outsiders, or, quote, paid agitators have attended any of these meetings. And in fact, most of the speakers at these town halls will identify themselves by name and where they live in the congressperson's district. Those are flat out lies. Anybody remember when they were claiming January 6th was Antifa and a false flag operation? But apparently not anymore because they pardoned all of them. Megan, your reactions to Derek Van Orden's comments.
Yeah, listen, Maggie, I of course want to echo what you said. I think we do not condone violence and certainly not death threats. What I will say, though, is I don't know if you saw the coverage from last week of the meeting with Congressman Van Orden's staffer that ended up getting canceled because it just grew in size. You know, I am from the 3rd Congressional District. I grew up there. My family still lives there. I saw the coverage and the people that were there looked a lot like my grandparents and my friend's grandparents. They certainly did not look like far left agitators that were there to be violent. What they wanted was to have a better understanding of why their congressperson would vote to potentially strip away some life-saving benefits that they have worked hard for and have earned.
And I'll just say this, Megan, many of my listeners are aware of the fact that I have been a public servant for nearly 15 years. And in that capacity, I have stood before all kinds of rooms with people angry where there have been misunderstandings, where voters and constituents have questions. I have done that proudly. And the most important moments in my public service career was when people were upset, confused, afraid, and worried, and yes, angry. The most respectful thing any elected official or any public servant can do is to have the courage and the faith in the American electorate to stand before the people that pay your salaries and elect you to office and hear what they have to say, especially and most importantly, when they have something to say where they disagree with you or are angry and are fearful about it. And I was always maybe not happy to do it, but understood very fundamentally that it was part of my first order of obligations. Shame on you, you coward and name-calling, ahistorical Congressman Van Orden. Shame on you.
I don't want this to be, you know, a pylon to Congressman Van Orden necessarily, because we have to.
I do, Megan. I'm just
going to go. We have to give her credit where it's due. Congressman Stile, for his, to his credit, I guess, last week after taking that vote, instead of flying home to his district to face his constituents, flew to the sunny beaches of Miami for a Republican fundraiser. So quite literally leaving his constituents out in the cold. So I think that's what we've come to expect, unfortunately, from these two.
Megan, I hope you come back really soon. Let's continue to talk about this while our middle class values and Wisconsin values are under threat from the MAGA movement. That's Megan Rowe from Opportunity Wisconsin. Folks, keep it locked. We're going to be back with more after the top of the hour. Really excited to be joined by Jeff Mandel talking about Brad Schimmel's efforts to undo governmental transparency laws here in the state of Wisconsin. What does it mean for you and your upcoming vote on April 1st? My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.